Hello and welcome to the Providence College Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Judge, class of 2005, and I'm joined today by Noah DeRossi Goldberg, a senior and member of the class of 2022. Noah, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you for inviting me.
So I'm going to go through a not so quick list of things you're involved in, and you might have more to add. But first off, you're a member of the History Honor Society, the Political Science Honor Society. You're an RA, member of the Diversity, Equity, Inclusion Task Force, president of the Debate Club, and president of the Esports Club. Did I miss anything?
That sounds all about right. It's a quite a full plate, but yeah, all things that I absolutely love to do.
So I want to start at the beginning of your journey here to Providence. And your mom is a graduate of the class of 1993, Gina DeRossi. Did you know you were always coming to PC?
Oh, yes. I went away in high school, either sophomore or junior year. I went away during the summer for a summer camp. I came back without knowing. My entire room was redecorated, black and white. Friar stuff. I have a signed, two signed photos, one of Ernie D, one of Marvin Barnes on my wall. I have a photo of me with Coach Cooley on my wall. And this was like junior year of high school. I hadn't even like thought of applying to colleges yet. So since I was little, I've had season tickets since, to the basketball game since I was two. I have been coming, embracing the Friar family for so long. I applied to one college, which is Providence College. Didn't apply to a single other school. I knew this was going to be my place for 4 years.
Let's get into when you got here. You're active in a lot of stuff as we went through. Was that a goal when you got here, is to try as much stuff as you can and try and figure out what you want to do, or if you had a plan all along?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I was in high school, I was very active in my high school community.
And that's in Dartmouth.
That's in Dartmouth. Yeah, Dartmouth High. So I knew coming here that I wanted to be involved, but I knew, cause I did debate in high school. So I knew that I was going to do that in college, but there wasn't really anything else that transferred appropriately to the college atmosphere. So I think a lot of the time I was searching, for what to do. And I'm, you know, obviously we're going to get down the road to talking about esports. But that was one of the first things I found when I got to Providence College. But I think that's probably what been one of my favorite parts about my experience here is that, you know, I've had the honor and privilege to get involved in so many programs and programs that have not just been things to do, you know, after classes or on the weekends, but it's things to do that actually, you know, affect my life that I can, you know, seek passion in and can develop skills in leadership and responsibility. So, I coming in, I knew I was going to be involved. I didn't realize I'd be this involved. I didn't expect to be spending my senior year, filled plate head to toe. But I'm so thankful that I decided to join so many programs. Also, part of that is thanks to the incredible activity expo that we do at the beginning of the year. Because that was an opportunity to see so many different things and be like, oh, that seems fun. Oh, that's interesting. So I was able to, you know, experience things hands-on and then, you know, dive right in.
You talked about leadership and growing. You've been an RA for a few years. Tell me about that experience and mentoring students and being a leader in that respect.
I don't think that there's anything in my life that gives me as much pride as being an RA for the past 3 years. It has been an experience that I would not trade for the world. I have grown so much as an individual by being around people. I think being an RA is an interesting role because, you know, in like movies and TV, you see them as like the school cops, the hall monitors. But the reality is that is the most minuscule part of your job. When I remember my sophomore year, I was in Guzman Hall. When I had my first resident come up to me and ask like personal questions and ask for assistance, it just made my heart warm. I tell this story all the time, but the very first night of move-in, one of the first year students came up to me. He was in a towel and he said, oh, is it okay if I go take a shower? And that that, like, immediately I was like, well, of course. And in the moment I was like, oh, yeah, I'm not your parent. I don't tell you when to shower. There's no rules. But over time I realized that, you know, this individual, you know, is in a new environment, has no idea, has never been away from their family, has never, you know, experienced living on their own. So they don't know if there are rules, you know? So they actually did feel the need to ask me. It felt good that they came to me if they could shower, because they truthfully didn't know. So, you know, that's a story I tell all the time, because I, you know, the ability to help people, to help individuals, especially first year students, because they're in such a vulnerable place in their lives. Everything's changing around them, you know, trying to balance a new type of workload as well as a new, like, social atmosphere. It's not an easy thing. It's a very difficult thing. So I think being able to assist in any way I can has definitely brought me a lot of pride, and I'm honored to have been selected for this role for 3 years now. And even as I look forward to the future, I am going to attempt in wherever I may go to try and emulate some of the mentoring and assistance that I've given to others in different atmospheres.
And that kind of segues to your role on the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Task Force that you're on, your ability to help other people who are not being treated like they should be, and being able to see how people are treated as living in the res halls every day, and see how people react to how things are going. Please tell me about your experience on that task force.
Yeah, absolutely. So for the past year, I guess, especially in the history department, we have a diversity, equity, inclusion task force. And basically our focus is on adjusting, not just curriculum, but adjusting, how we see diversity and inclusion on campus. And, you know, I think that we all understand that over the past year, we've seen that things need to change, that there needs to be better attention given to how people are, one, represented in their community, two, how people are supported in their community, and three, what changes can we actually make? So I think that being on this task force and being able to be around some incredible professors and other students and faculty to really, really get to the bottom of these issues, I've really been thankful for the opportunity to do. I think that, especially in the history department, it's something where I think we've always assumed history to be this, like, stagnant thing that is, there's one word written in a history book, and that's what we use for the next few centuries. But I think we're starting to come to terms with now that that's not necessarily the case, is that all forms of history that we have engaged in the past have had different lenses. So what does it mean when somebody of a ruling majority class is the person writing the history? You know, the famous quote, the history is for the victors. I think that that's something that we as a history department and diversity, equity, inclusion are coming to terms with in trying to, address those differences, trying to give more voice and agency to groups that have been underrepresented and undervoiced throughout history. I'm very thankful to be on this committee. I'm very thankful to be working specifically in the Providence College, area, making sure that, the school that I may be leaving soon, but in the future it will hopefully improve in terms of representation and culture.
So how do you see the college has moved towards this goal of being a more beloved community over your 4 years while you've been here, minus those few months that you guys had to go home for? Which, yeah. I mean, and we're still a community, even when everyone went home in March of 2020, we were still having these conversations. And so growth was still being made during the pandemic. So what have you seen in your 4 years here?
Absolutely. I think the biggest thing that I've seen, and what I'm so thankful for, and which I hope moves further, is the adjustment to the CIV curriculum. It still is remaining true to the development of Western Civ. It still is remaining true to what it is attempting to do, but it's also giving more light to underrepresented groups. It's no longer a class learning about, you know, the same 10 white philosophers from ancient Greece and the medieval ages. You know, we're reading stories from, Black authors, reading stories from female authors, all throughout history. That has really changed my perspective, because I remember even my first year here, being in Honor Civ and having a specific team, I was learning very different things from some of my friends who were in other civs. I was reading like very interesting stories of slave stories from a slave perspective. I was reading, female perspectives of the Middle Ages and all these things. Other people were reading, Plato and other basic writing. So I think what's really important to me is that, this changes further, more and more classes, there's almost a standard that needs to be set to make sure that representation is seen in our Civ curriculum. But I'm very happy with the changes that have been made so far. And I really do expect the future to hold those more changes as well.
I also mentioned earlier that you are the president of the debate club, and it is, as you told me before we started, in its 100th year as the longest running club on campus. So just outpacing the college by, or the college is outpacing the debate club by about 7 years. So what's that been like? You started when you were a freshman, and where have you taken the club since?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, 100th Debate Society is 100 years old this year, longer than Student Congress, surprisingly, longer than Friars Club. We're the longest running consecutive club on campus. So first of all, I didn't know this when I came into the presidency this year. I got an email from the Phillips Memorial Library saying, it seems like we have an anniversary for you this year. Do you have any materials? And I said, what anniversary? He said, it's your 100th year. I said, okay. So I have to be president of debate during its 100th year. That's no pressure at all. No pressure. So I started my first year. I was a big debater in high school. Big. I went to like state tournaments and stuff. So I love doing debate. Came to PC, and I just fell in love with it even more. I think the debate at PC is a very interesting, it's a very interesting environment, because it's not like the traditional like debating style. It's not one person going up there yelling about a topic. It's, teams of two competing against other schools. And in high school, I was competing against like other like public schools and a few private schools. In the past 4 years, I've competed against Brown, Harvard, Yale, the big wigs, really. But being in debate has been such a joy. Being able to travel is so incredible. That's like part of the Debate Society is for tournaments, we have to travel on weekends. I've been, up to Boston multiple times. We've had local trips. Personally, my favorite is always when we go to Georgetown, which is a fun experience, going down to DC. But over the past 4 years, we've seen change in debate. I think that over time, we've grown and become stronger in our capabilities as debaters. I know I've had Nick Ribello, who's my vice president, who I've been in debate with for the past 4 years. The two of us have grown so much in debating over this time. So I think that I'm very thankful. I plan on going to law school next year, so I'm very thankful that I have, gotten some of my arguing skills up to par in debate. But yeah, and looking forward to the rest of our 100th year, we plan on having multiple events to celebrate the legacy of debate at Providence College, because it's also something that coincides so greatly with the mission of the college. I think that, Veritas, search for truth, is integral to the debate, the idea of the parliamentary debate. So I think that it'll be a very fun time in the spring to kind of celebrate the legacy of Providence College Debate while, you know, coinciding it with the Providence College mission.
And some would say we've kind of lost that art of debate in politics nowadays. It's everybody just yelling to their own echo chambers and screaming and telling someone that they're lying when and facts get thrown to the side. Is there something still authentic and traditional about these debate competitions that we don't see in the real world when we're talking about our elections and our politics nowadays?
Absolutely. But like the first thing that comes to mind for me is the inherent structure. You know, the structure of the debate not only helps to, you know, make it standardized, but it also makes sure that everyone has, you know, the ability to speak and the time to speak, which I think a lot of the time in American politics, we haven't seen. We have two people, like you said, two sides that are yelling to their own echo chambers, but yet they're not giving each other time to be heard, time to speak. You know, there is no filibuster in debate, in parliamentary debate. Everyone's voices are heard, and decisions are made. I think another part is it's there are a lot of like safety guards in parliamentary debate, you know, to respecting your competitors. You know, you go into the debate shaking hands, saying hi, talking about your classes, talking about your after graduation things, plans. Then you debate, and sometimes it gets not necessarily heated, but you know, people get into it and it gets exciting and gritty. And you know, you hit those final words, you have that impassioned closing argument, and then you end, and then you go back to joking and laughing and talking about those after college plans. So I think that's something that we're missing a lot too, is remembering that even when we have these political and policy arguments, beforehand and afterhand, we need to know that we're peers. We engage in the same space. You know, we're all American citizens. So I think that's something that's really important in debate, is, you know, coming together and like respecting your fellow peers. And I think that's something that we're not seeing. Maybe there's a few people that I can think of that need to go to a few debate comps to learn a few things. But yeah, no, that's what I see from debate.
So we've talked about a little more of the serious, heavy topics that I wanted to cover with you. So let's move on to a little more of the fun stuff, and that's games. You are the current president of the esports club on campus, and we featured the esports club in the fall 2019 magazine, and then we did an episode of the podcast in February of 2020. So we're about 21 months later. Can you give us a quick update or on the esports club? It doesn't have to be quick. We've got all the time in the world.
Absolutely. So the esports is my pride and joy, and I love it. And I spend every waking moment that isn't doing debate or of my other engagements or classes, work obviously, dedicated to esports and growing our program. So definitely a lot has changed since then. We now have 9 active teams, which is something that we did not have. We had like 4 or 5 maybe. We have 9 active teams, most of whom have qualified for playoffs. Playoffs actually start next week, which is really exciting. We have, you know, put more focus on developing the facility that we have in Slaven. We've given it a name. So it's now called the GR, which stands for Gaming Room. But, you know, it's colloquially known as the GR. And that's something we're trying to push. We're going to try and get signage to have that be the official title. So we've developed, not only have we added the amount of games in our catalog at our program, we also have been competing far beyond the expectations. We have, you know, so many talented players that just happen to be at Providence College, which is we're so thankful for. You know, we have players that are really talented. Nick Vasilia on the Overwatch team is one of the best Overwatch players in the country. Max Tienel and Nathan Cause on the Valorant team, they're both phenomenal high ranked players.
All right. Well, I'm going to cut you off because you're not going to toot your own horn, but I will for you. And that you were named the 2021 ECAC Valorant Player of the Year. I saw
that. That is true. I was named Valorant Player of the Year, but that would not have been possible. This isn't an Oscar speech, but that would not have been possible without my teammates supporting me.
It's just like an MVP in any other sport. You got to have teammates to win these titles.
Absolutely. But yeah, no. So we're developing the amount of games. We're putting more work into the facility itself. As I mentioned, we did a full redecorating and remodeling, changing around the space. As of today, we finally have an esports store where people can purchase jerseys, hoodies, mouse pads, flags, polos, hats, and all that good stuff, which is very, very exciting. So yeah, we've definitely come a lot in 21 months. I will say that when I came in here freshman year, I was present for the setting up of the room. I was putting together chairs and monitors and computers. So going from that my freshman year to now watching my teams compete at the highest level in playoffs, beating some of the highest ranked teams, is one of the proudest joys I've had in my life.
For those who might not go back and listen to the 2020 podcast, what are some of the games that we compete in and the leagues and conferences that we compete in?
Absolutely. So we compete in two major conferences, the ECAC, the Eastern Coastal Athletic Conference, and the Big East, which obviously everyone knows is the big name. In the Big East, we compete in League of Legends, which is arguably the biggest esport in the world. They have like the highest viewership and things like that. Viewership for the League of Legends World Finals for the professionals is higher than the NBA Finals and the World Series. It is massive globally. In terms of the ECAC, we compete in Overwatch, Valorant. We actually have two teams competing in Valorant in the ECAC, FIFA, and then Super Smash Bros. Very different games. We have games that are, tactical, tactile FPS games, first-person shooter for those unaware. We have, MOBA games, which are more strategic games, and then we have fighting games as well. So we're really trying to encompass all aspects of gaming to make sure that every student who wants to test their skill in their game is recognized. We actually have three or four teams prepared for the spring semester to enter competition. We have Counter-Strike, NHL, Rainbow Six Siege, and Rocket League prepared to begin their run. So I think that the key thing is making sure that we have enough games where everyone who wants to compete competitively can do so. I remember my freshman year, League of Legends was really the only quote-unquote competitive game. Everyone else was kind of just labeled as like a fun team. We've definitely changed our perspective on that. And made sure that all teams are treated equally and seen equally as competitors for under the Friars tag.
But it's also the beauty of the room is that anyone can come and play games if they want. You don't have to be this super competitive gamer. The room is welcome to anyone who plays games and wants to hang out and has an interest in games.
Absolutely. It is just as much a competitive arena as it is a social space. There are people, I think the most common example is friends of those competitive gamers. We have these hyper competitive people who are like searching for the win. And then their friends come in and they play Minecraft and they hang out and they chat and we laugh. And that's kind of the best part of the esports facility is that, yes, we have those competitive gamers, but at the same time, we have a casual community that is just embracing their love of gaming at Providence College. So that's why I think we're such a versatile organization, because I, as far as I know, we're the only one that has that duality of both a competitive atmosphere as well as a casual community atmosphere. No other, we're designated as a club sport. No other club sport, you know, has the privilege that we do of having that dual designation. So we're very thankful to be a space for all individuals that whether they are competitive or not, that share a love of the game.
Obviously, there's a lot of passion there. Where did that passion come from? When did you start playing games? What was your earliest memory?
I have been playing games for as long as I can remember. I remember having the original Xbox and Wii. I would play games with my dad. But I was always more of a casual gamer. I was never really competitive until probably halfway through high school. A video game called Rainbow Six Siege started becoming popular. And I was playing it, and I was playing it on the PlayStation, and I was getting kind of good. Not gonna lie, I was doing pretty well. But I found out that, you know, real competitive people played on the computer, because the distinction there is really great. If you have a computer, you're like a higher level gamer, quote unquote, as they like to say. So I decided that year for Christmas I wanted a computer. I wanted to make the switch. Start playing the game on computer. So I did so. It was rough at first. It's a hard transition, but then I started getting more into the competitive scene. I played more, you know, played on some casual teams. I ended up thankfully becoming friends I still have to this day with people who were engaged in the professional scene, whether they be pros or professional casters, some of whom I still keep in touch with. So that really invigorated my love of esports. Through that game, they have the World Championships in Montreal every year. So I went for 2 years to the World Championships, got to meet other esports competitors. So that kind of invigorated my love of esports. So when I got to Providence College, I was like, wow, this is a new aspect of my life that I really enjoy and want to pursue. What's the scene here? What's going on? Do we have an esports program? Found out we did. One was being started right as I was speaking. So I came in and I was like, I need to play Rainbow Six Siege competitively. I want to fit that urge that I have. Started playing. Didn't go so well. We had some troubles, because I think that something I realized and that has stayed with me to this day is, not everyone is at the same level, not just of play, but also of desire as you. Some people want to be more competitive, some people don't. And that's why I've emphasized this duality in our program for so long, is that my freshman year, I wanted to play Rainbow Six Siege competitively, like I wanted to win the World Series. My teammates wanted to have a good time, you know, and that's something over time that I've come to not just respect, but celebrate. Because I think that's really the point of gaming as a whole. So my love of esports has I've been here for a very long time. Thankfully, I was very lucky. My Valorant team this year, they're all very like-minded to me. They all want to win. They all see that trophy in the distance. Max, in a way, who's my fellow senior on the team. It's our last year, so we want to make it count. So I'm very excited that not only can I embrace the casual side when I speak with the general members of the group, but then I can get into a game and, you know, try my heart out with my Valorant teammates, which is very exciting.
And that was the answer that officially made me feel old when you said you started playing games on an original Xbox, and I had an original Xbox in my sophomore dorm.
Yeah. Listen, technology changes fast, though. It wasn't that long ago.
I'm keeping up. I've got my Series S and my 3070 at the house, so I'm still keeping up. I've got my feet in the fire still.
Good to hear it.
So yeah, you don't have to, once you get old, you don't have to stop playing games as much as people tell you.
Yeah, I don't think that there's anything that could stop me from playing games. Because my dad still plays games nightly, which is fun. It's fun making fun of him. He doesn't have the same skill that he used to.
None of us do.
Now, although I will say for the record, to this day, he can still beat me in any sports game. I'm the worst at any sports game. I'm terrible. I don't know why. Awful. Anything else, I can kick him in, but sports games, I'm the worst.
You answered what games were to expand in the club and the preview of the spring. So what about, what's your favorite game to just play, not compete, but just casually play?
Oh, that's a tough question. I am a sucker for story-driven solo games. I am, so excited for so many games coming out. Horizon Zero Dawn Forbidden West is coming out soon, which is exciting. I'm also a crazy Star Wars nerd. So Jedi Fallen Order was a phenomenal game.
Oh, the game was so good.
Yeah. So good. I can't wait for a sequel and any other Star Wars game that come out. But, it's funny, though, because with so much to do in my senior year, I found myself like playing casual games a lot less. Because any time that I have to play video games, while it is fun, it's also practice. Which I think is something that often goes unnoticed with like the esports scene. People think, oh, they're just playing video games and then they have their matches. Well, it's like, no, when I'm playing, I'm practicing my aim. I'm learning call outs. I'm doing all these things. So I will say my casual gaming has definitely gone down. But with the holidays coming up, I'm very excited to get home and rest for a bit. Deathloop is a game that's calling my name that I'm excited to play. There's a few games that I have on my list that I'm definitely gonna grind through the holidays. But at the moment, it's really whatever I can get my hands on that is a good juicy story.
Did you get through Miles Morales last year?
Of course, I got through Miles Morales. It was phenomenal, just like the original Spider-Man.
Yeah. They're both excellent. I got rid of my PlayStation to get the new Xbox Series S because I'm kind of all in on Game Pass and figured, if I can get one of these new Xboxes, then I'll go that way.
Game Pass is just the most phenomenal thing that I've ever experienced. I have my Xbox here, my Series X here, and I'm constantly like downloading a game, playing it for like an hour, deleting it, but then playing a new game. It's incredible. I actually, one game on Game Pass, probably my most played game at the moment is Slay the Spire, which is just like it's just a card-based game. But I've been playing it nonstop because with Game Pass, you can just like launch into a game, play it for a little bit and jump off. Like it's beautiful. So I love, if we want to talk about like the future of technology, it's definitely a different than you used to have to like disk in, boot it up, wait 10 minutes for the load screens. I can literally press two buttons right now and be playing a game instantaneously. I'm playing a game that once I have something to do, I hop right back off and it saves my spot. So I think that's something that I'm so thankful to be alive during this time to experience that.
Well, and the beauty also is you can start playing these things on the phone and pick up your save on the phone. Like I have a Game Pass app on my Android phone and I can pick that up, pair it to a controller and be picking up the same save that I played down in my basement on my huge 75-inch TV. Like this world is wild. And for those who don't know what we're talking about, Game Pass is like a Netflix of games for Xbox. It's $15 a month and you get hundreds of games you can choose from to download. And now they just put in a feature where you can start streaming the game right from your console or your computer, which is a really cool feature if you have the speed and don't want to sit through a really long download.
Yeah, it's incredible technology that is it's so impressive and it's so much fun because like you get in those moments where you're like playing a game on your phone and sometimes you have to like be like, oh, hold on, I'm playing a game on my phone and not like Angry Birds, which no shame to Angry Birds, phenomenal game. I think that was very big for most of us, but that's very different from playing Cyberpunk on your phone. Very, very different.
Next year, you can play Flight Simulator on your phone or on an older Xbox. It's incredible. I said this a few in that last podcast we did, and my mom plays Candy Crush or Bejeweled all the time. And you might not consider a gamer, but everyone at this point has some relation to games and can play games now wherever they are.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've even seen like emphasis from major game development companies into mobile gaming, whether it be mobile esports with PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. Mobile is a major esports along with Free Fire, but also like the casual games. You know, we see like Star Wars, Marvel putting out mobile games constantly. You know, I think that's so exciting because I think that is what's helping to break the stigma about gamers. You know, it's no longer that kid who, you know, sits in his mom's basement and yells at 14-year-olds on Call of Duty, right? Gamers are everyone. If you play, like you said, if you play Candy Crush or if you're playing, you know, top-ranked Valorant, you are equally as much a gamer. And gaming shapes your life. It shapes your free time, which I think is exciting. Yeah. So I'm so thankful that there's more emphasis put on mobile games, because even if I don't play as many as others might, it's still an opportunity to expand the world of gaming, which I think in times where, you know, a lot of things are uncertain and there's a lot of animosity and anger, sometimes, you know, matching three little blocks together that pop up into a candy and they explode, sometimes that's what you need. That is what you need. And I'm thankful to, you know, do my part in trying to expand that environment to as many people as possible.
And I don't think it can be said any better than that. So I think we'll end on that. Noah, this has been a pleasure. It was great talking to you. We've got obviously have a bunch in common, and it was a lot of fun. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chris. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Providence College Podcast. You can listen to the PC Podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, including your smart speaker. Feedback, including guest recommendations, is welcome by emailing podcast@providence.edu. Thanks for listening, and go Friars.